space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. We're joined yet again by Mark. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Wes. Thanks again for having me. Hope I don't overstay my welcome.
Are you ready to... No, I think we had a good discussion about Devil in the Dark, and now we're going to be talking about Errand of Mercy. Did you know this was the first appearance of the Klingons?
When I looked it up...
Before or after you watched it?
So I looked it up initially when you told me which episodes. I'm like, oh, what's going on in these? Just kind of the two-second Wikipedia explanation, and then it was, oh yeah, this is the first appearance of the Klingons, and I'm like, oh, Wes is playing a funny joke on me because he knows that I do not like the Klingons. So I think it may have been intentional that you gave me this episode.
Errand of Mercy is episode number 26 of the first season of TOS. It was written by Gene L. Coon, directed by John Newland. It aired back on the 23rd of March, 1967. In this episode, with a war with the Klingons declared, Captain Kirk and his first officer, Mr. Spock, attempt to sway the incomprehensibly placid population of a planet to resist an invading military occupation. Well, Mark, we're going to break down the appearance of the Klingons in Star Trek lore. Do they live up to our expectations? Do they let us down? What do we think of the episode? All this and more. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Mark are going to come back, and we're going to break down Errand of Mercy.
Gentlemen, my government has informed me that the Klingons are expected to move against your planet with the objective of making it a base of operation against the Federation. My mission, frankly, is to keep them from doing it.
What you're saying, Captain, is that we seem to have a choice between dealing with you or your enemies.
No, sir. With the Federation, you have a choice. You have none with the Klingons. The Klingons are a military dictatorship. War is their way of life. Life under the Klingon rule would be very unpleasant. We offer you protection.
We thank you for your altruistic offer, Captain, but we really do not need your protection.
We are a simple people, Captain. We have nothing that anybody could want.
We have this planet and its strategic location. I assure you that if you don't take action to prevent it, the Klingons will move against you just as surely as your sun rises. We will help you build defenses, build facilities.
We have no defenses, Captain, nor are any needed.
All right, Mark, the Klingons, they're here. They're queer.
get used to it.
Get used to it. I think this episode is better... I think the episode might be a better discussion than it is an episode. Would you agree with that, or do you disagree with it?
You mean like the philosophical message behind the episode?
And I think just like what the Klingons represent and how they've changed and things like that. Or do you disagree? Do you think this is a terrible episode? Do you think it's a great episode?
Let me phrase the question in a different way. Would we be talking about this episode if it was just a completely different warlike race and not the Klingons, given their legacy that they would mean for Star Trek, you know, over the next five or six TV series and, you know, boatload of movies that they did?
No, I would have not. The only reason I included this on our podcast list is because it's the introduction of the Klingons.
Yeah. So I think that's all you need to know, that the episode is not overly memorable. It's just the fact that it's important because of the fact that this introduced what the Klingons were and kind of a, you know, the beta version, the test version of the Klingons that would then be shaped for what would probably become the most famous Star Trek alien race.
I think I'd agree with that. I think that I didn't think this episode was bad or anything. I just think it's a very talky episode, right? Like, not a lot happens here. They beam down to Organia. They meet the Organians, and the Klingons invade, and the Klingons take over very easily, and the Enterprise runs away, and Kirk and Spock are stuck there, and they have to negotiate it. I do think that the episode is interesting because it's the first time that we've seen a higher power civilization that actually has a sort of philosophy of life that to me appears to be a higher level. like, we've run into a lot of trickster gods. We've run into, you know, with the trickster of whatever that episode was, the one with Trelane, the Squire Gothos. And we've run into Charlie X, and he's been a sort of a troubled teen with powers of gods and stuff. This is the first time we've run into a race of aliens that have a higher power and also have a approach to life that sort of mimics that higher power to me.
So I guess my first question would be, and maybe it's because we've gone through the TNG podcast and now are in TOS, are you sick to death of godlike beings in your Star Trek episodes?
I'm only annoyed with them when they don't do anything and I think they don't do anything interesting a lot of the time, and I think this episode does do something interesting with them. Like, yeah. Q to me in TNG is always much more interesting as a sort of moral barometer about mm-hmm. stuff. His episodes where he does that are much better than when he's just like, I'm going to fuck with the Enterprise today. The episodes like Charlie X and the Squire Gothos and stuff like in TOS are not nearly as interesting as what this episode is talking about.
Yeah, so I mean, I like the message that they sort of evolved beyond conflict. You know, and they're a peaceful group of beings.
And more that humans are primitive at this point, right? Like Kirk's way of life is sort of primitive.
And we talked last time about the Shyamalan twist that, you know, I feel like a lot. I don't think I realized that this was a common theme in Star Trek episodes, but maybe it frequently is, because I think there are a bunch where all of a sudden in the last act they try to change the storyline on you. And The twist here was that everyone thought that these were primitive beings, but oh wait, they're actually on a much higher level than you thought right. They were,
yep.
And they've evolved beyond humankind and don't need conflict or violence.
Yes, and have the ability to stop it, basically. Yes.
They can just make anything extra warm to the touch.
If you watch this episode...
They can bake a potato.
And I think... Had you seen this episode before? If you hadn't... Or, yeah, have you seen this episode before?
I don't remember seeing this episode before, no. So I think this was another new one for me.
I knew this one is important in terms of Star Trek lore because the Treaty of Organia is a thing. Like this, how the episode resolves itself is kind of a thing in Star Trek. And so I knew what was going on. I think the episode is actually maybe more interesting if you know what the Organians are. At what point did you realize what was going on in this one?
I'll honestly say that I did not... I believe there was something going on and they were likely some sort of super beings. I didn't realize they were energy blobs mm-hmm. until the very end. But clearly, when we talked about this last episode, when they started massive killing people, when they're like, yeah, we just Old Yeller 200 people out back.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, yeah, that's fine. I'm like, okay, so something's going on here. They clearly don't care about and why did they need 200 people? Sorry, yeah. I know. Like, couldn't they have killed 5 people at PAC and gotten the same impact?
The Klingons are for big sort of story movies.
You know, go
devices.
Big or go home. If you're going to genocide a people, you can't do it 5 at a time.
I think watching this episode, if you're aware of what the Organians are, it comes across as... It's almost more interesting to me because Kirk is pleading with them the entire time, right? He's like, only I can save you. Only the Federation can save you. Like, join us. We'll be able to protect you against the barbarian hordes. And the Organian reaction to it is kind of like, this is cute. You know, like, thank you for telling us about this, but we don't really, it doesn't matter to us. The only problem, or not the only problem, but the big problem I think with this episode is, why don't the Organians just explain, listen, we could destroy you with a single thought. Don't worry about us.
So I'm going to do a shameless plug for your friends over at Trekabout that you've had on this podcast multiple times. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you listened to their episode on this episode.
Are you committing podcast bigamy
podcast
on me?
Podcast theft. Well, it was more I watched this episode like 4 days ago, and then I'm like, this, nothing really jumped out at me. I just like kind of want to hear someone else's thoughts, you know, kind of see how they contrast to my own.
Yeah.
And they made that exact point that they're like, okay, so you could have avoided a lot of conflict if, the Organians just basically told Kirk, you know, we're a superpower being. We don't care.
Right.
And that, And that sort of shapes – it sort of makes you question the narrative in a different way, because when Kirk's in front of them being like, hey, these bad guys are going to come subjugate your planet. Yeah. They are going to enslave all of your people and, you know, put you to work in the spice mines where the Horda might be roaming around.
Yeah.
And they just don't care. And that makes you think, was Kirk coming at it from the perspective of he really cared about their people, or was he on some level really concerned about the strategic nature of the Klingons getting that neutral zone? It wasn't the neutral zone, but planet that might be a strategic advantage to them. What do you think Kirk's motives were there?
Kirk's motives, I think, in this one are purely he wants to keep this planet for Federation strategic necessity.
Like, because if that's it, then you're right. They should have just told him they were super beat.
Well, I think it's interesting because the episode, like, the Organians basically, their reaction to the Klingons and the humans, right, is no different than if you were in your house and you saw a couple ants in your kitchen, right? You'd be like, well, this is weird. Like, it's like, oh, I'm like, there's a couple ants in the kitchen. This is fine. I don't need to do anything about it, but this could be annoying.
So when you have ants in your kitchen, do you have a conversation with the West?
I think the Organians kind of go down a nicer path of it, but the Organians are on such a higher level, right, that the threats to them are kind of comical. Like, Kirk and them, they're more just overly polite in that they aren't just saying, like, get the fuck out of here, like, we're going to do what we want to do. It's a nice narrative structure that they give Kirk the time to explain it to him, and watching it, knowing that episode, it just seems so, it shines such a light on how feeble the Klingon and human position is here against them. You know, there's no reason, like, they're basically just yelling at the wall. These guys aren't going to do what they want to do. They could easily stop anything from going on. They're lucky in the first place that the Organians are so peaceful by nature.
See, what the story lacked, and this is what I think you're hinting at, is that there was not a good reason for the Organians to be so secretive.
Mm-hmm.
It was just simply being secretive for the narrative purposes of being the story.
Yes, I'd agree with that, and I think that's a big problem with the story.
Yeah, and I think that's what I came back to, is just like, oh, that, you know, it's almost like they came up, the writers in the writer's room came up with what they wanted to be the hard-hitting concept or kind of the resolution, and then just tried to write backwards and to form a full story around it. They wanted to say, like, oh, we have these two groups who are going to fight, but this bigger group is going to prevent them. Okay, let's build a story around that.
Right.
So I think that was kind of the challenge there. And otherwise, I mean, the Organians were fun. They were cool. They were good. They were like, yeah, Kirk, we're good. Don't worry.
I like they even pretended to have a discussion about it, like they were actually considering it. They're like, let me talk with the other elders. And he's like, he comes back 2 minutes later, he's like, we don't need your help. I'm sorry about that.
Like, how long should we keep fucking with this guy?
I know, just like, we got 45 minutes to fill.
So yeah, what were they actually secretly discussing amongst the elders?
Whatever.
If really the Klingons represented absolutely zero threat. They were just like, so should we, like, kill this guy? Should we just keep letting him do what he's doing? Also, the 200 people that were killed, were they just not real? Like, energy beings? How did they write that out?
I think my interpretation of it was just like how when they broke them out, they can just sort of pause time and leave. You know, like, they have total control over life and death, sort of. Like, you can't kill these things. They're basically cues. So that was my interpretation. Those 200 did not actually die. They do exist, but they didn't die. Do you think that I don't know, like, they spend a lot of, there's something interesting about TOS to me in that a lot of the plots rely on isolating characters. Like, so many of the first season plots rely on, like, they beam down and they're stuck in this position. They can't do anything. This is another situation where Kirk and Spock are stuck in this isolation thing because the Enterprise has to leave, right? Because it gets attacked by a Klingon attack fleet or something. Mm-hmm. So we're stuck with Kirk and Spock on this planet. And I don't know. Like, there's not a lot going on here. The only thing that really sticks out to me outside of the getting to the situation and then resolving it is the Klingon mind erasing device or whatever it is, their, like, truth test. Did you have thoughts about the Klingon Truth Test? All right, let's.
I have on my list Mind Sifter.
Mind Sifter. Yeah, they
call, is that what they call it? I don't know if I wrote that down correctly.
Let's talk about. We've talked about the Organians and sort of like where they are. We'll probably come back to them. I guess we should talk about the Klingons here, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I have so many things that I want to kind of touch on, but the Klingons, clearly they appear to me to be kind of their test version. They seemed obsessed with war, which is something the Klingons would become.
That makes sense.
They did not quite seem to be obsessed with honor and duty.
No.
In the way that, you know, Worf and I think the Klingons would later become.
They call them a military dictatorship.
Yeah.
Which is not, you know what they actually reminded me of in this episode more than anything?
What's that?
They reminded me of the way the Cardassians eventually become, where they're sort of civilized brutality. Like, they're polite. He's like, Kirk, will you share a drink with me as I discuss the plot that I'm about to hatch? They're a military dictatorship, which is very Cardassian. They just felt much more of a, like, understandable evil than the Klingon Empire does, the way that they would be portrayed in TNG. Not that they're an evil then, but I feel like this, the way that they're set up here actually makes more sense to me in terms of how a real civilization would act, as opposed to the TNG Klingons, which I don't feel make a lot of sense outside of the universe.
I mean, yeah, I would agree. They seemed pretty black or white, just sort of, you know, rule by power type of guys.
In this episode.
Yeah. And I mean, eventually, and I don't know if this is just sort of backwards writing, I think at the end they, you know, the Organian said maybe one day your two cultures will be friends.
I was amazed by that. I was amazed.
Well, you're looking at it like it is prophetic, but it is more like likely that they watched the Klingon episodes and said, okay, well, let's make a treaty when they did Next Generation, right?
I would think that I think it was just not luck of the draw, but I think they wrote it that way, be like, you'll be friends of the future, thinking that they'll probably never see the Klingons again. And then they came back in a big way. And it feels very, it feels like good writing only by happenstance.
So did the Klingons reappear in TOS?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
They're huge in the movies.
So it is clearly built upon the strength of the actor who played Kor in this episode.
I think so.
Who had a lot of good one-on-one kind of challenging discussions with Kirk.
Yes.
So clearly based upon that actor, the entire alien species was born as a recurring threat. And then they kind of based upon the previous appearances, built the lore around it and eventually made them friends and made friends and allies, the Klingons and the Federation, based upon kind of that little teaser moment at the end of that episode to make it seem like it was, you know, a prophecy-esque,
yes,
almost.
Yes, it does make it seem like a prophecy at this point. It might not have seemed that way back then. Back then, I think they were just trying to hammer home the point of, like, you won't always fight forever. Like, not fighting is good. But it definitely worked out that way. Obviously, noticeably, they don't have their forehead ridges.
I was going to ask about that. When did the forehead, did they evolve that like 20 years later?
There is a canon explanation as to why that happened.
Really? They went to the trouble of making a canon explanation based upon makeup differences?
Yep. Based
Do you know, is the canon explanation explainable within 3 seconds, or is it a big thing?
I think it's a genetic disease. I forget when this gets explained, but I'm pretty sure
they got the ridge plague.
It's some sort of genetic thing that goes on. I think it's Enterprise. I might be showing my hand as a bad Star Trek fan. I think it's Enterprise that sort of explains that, because obviously the Klingons are the rest of TOS, and the Klingons are in trouble with Tribbles as a big part. Like, they continue this non-head ridge thing, which will change for the movies of TOS. But I think that I prefer this portrayal of Klingon culture over TNG's portrayal of Klingon culture.
Well, you know where I stand on this. And
you don't like the Klingons.
Well, when we talked about parallels, I made my apology and said I don't want to seem like I'm Klingon racist.
But don't you?
It was more just that show focused really heavily on Klingon politics, and it just became like this, oh, you, Worf talking to Alexander, you must be obsessed with honor and duty.
Yes.
And eventually I was just like, okay, don't show me these characters anymore.
Well, I like the politics of the Klingon homeworld in TNG. I don't like this sort of idea that they became honor bound and everything, which they sort of aren't in this TOS section. They're much more of just a powerful invading military that's out for conquest, right? Like everything. Is there anything you think that the Klingons do in this episode that doesn't make sense as a real world action that the Klingons would do?
I think Trek about said Genghis Khan like down to the Fu Manchus.
Yeah, they're sort of Khan-ish.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think their portrayal was roughly consistent with what the Klingons would become. They just sort of fleshed out the Klingon motives a little bit more. And overall, I think it was consistent with them being a conquering group that likely would, if there was an independent planet that was on the border of their territory, they'd probably go in there and assert their will. I mean, yes. That seems consistent with how the Klingons are written.
Yes. Yeah. Did you think that the war... Do they actually go to war with the Federation in this episode?
It's not really clear. All of a sudden, just they or get are, shot at right at the beginning.
Or are we at war with them and we just never heard about it before?
There was like an exposition dump right off the bat. Yeah. And I think they were kind of at war. I don't know if it was a full-fledged war or border skirmishes or kind of what it was. But there were already some conflict between the Federation and the Klingons at the start of the story.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of became like, oh, this is the border territory. This is going to be the key strategic piece. And Kirk's going to go down there and he's going to protect these people / possibly maybe try to protect them for the Federation's interests.
Do you think that what do you think is the most interesting aspect of this episode? Or the least interesting, I guess. We'll go off in that direction.
The least interesting?
Well, I feel like there's a lot going on in this episode, and I just want to pin down where you want to sort of kick off into, if there's anything.
So, well, I think we touched on the last episode, the communism allegories. I think we can possibly get there in a minute. I was bored through a lot of this episode.
Okay.
There were a few scenes that I liked, the action scenes, and I know I should probably like the storytelling more because, you know, I'm a guest on this podcast.
No, I really don't care. I appreciate you saying you were bored because I can understand being bored through a lot of this episode.
But, like, you know, when they blew up the munitions dump with the...
That felt pointless.
With the hand grenade.
Did you like that?
I enjoyed it. I was like, why didn't they bring this hand grenade to fight the fucking Horda last episode? I mean, you know, you got to figure, and I know you're a fan of Pulp Fiction, the movie, right?
Yep.
So at one scene when they're the opening scene where they're walking in, they're like, oh, we should have brought in shotguns for this.
Right.
Just like when they brought in like phasers to fight the Horda, I'm like, you got to think at some point they got to bring in better weaponry. So, you know, why didn't they raid the munitions dump to take on the Klingons there? Instead, they find like a concussion grenade and just blow up the entire thing.
I would think that they'd have replicators or something making those.
Yeah. And then the other scene where they're storming his office. And I think doesn't Kirk break out like a garrote and like choke out a dude? Like, or is it his belt? I don't know. Just all of a sudden he like spy chokes out a dude with his belt. I'm like, that's pretty awesome.
And Spock got nerve finches him at the to get
we're play, just yeah. Lucky he didn't like mind meld with one of the guys unwillingly. But
I think that what you wanted to talk about here, which is the allegory to I guess it's an allegory of communism. I mean, it's the allegory of what these two, the Federation and the Klingon empires, are going through, right? And is sort of a Kirk, what do you think of Kirk's approach to... He actually says in this episode, I'm not a diplomat, which is very, very interesting to me.
So why the hell wouldn't they send a diplomat down? Why
would they send Kirk down? Because I think the Federation knows that they're at war at this point, right? Yeah. So there's no diplomacy. But it's very interesting to me that Kirk does not consider himself a diplomat, which is what Picard preeminently considers himself to be, a diplomat, right? That's the difference between
Can
the
we
characters?
Just say bad writing?
In,
or just a difference
in, this
in the well, no, just a difference between Kirk and Picard and the way they handle situations. Like the way that Picard would have handled the situation, and I know we frequently have that conversation on this podcast. You know, when we're talking about Picard, how would have Kirk handled this? When we're talking about Kirk, Picard would have approached it much more diplomatically and probably would have been, you know, much less aggressive when they declined his help and. Kirk, I don't know if it was a thing then, but Kirk definitely probably violated the Prime Directive. He refused to say no. He was really aggressive and date rapey.
He got really rapey with his policy.
Help you guys, whether you want it or not, I'm blowing up this munitions dump, and we'll choke out a few Klingons along the way if I need to.
You're gonna love this help I'm about to give to you. But yeah, it's a big difference between the shows, right? TOS's ethos is much more of a post-World War II American influence on the rest of the world type stuff, right? And TNG's is much more of, well, we've seen what happens when we influence the world, so now we're going to go to the other extreme of not influencing each other. And I think they're both equally flawed.
And I have a question about that before you go on. You've previously said that sometimes TOS just kind of feels like the Enterprise is just out there on its own, like blazing new territory. And the Federation, while it may exist, is not this kind of overarching umbrella body that's kind of aware of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Is Kirk down there approaching it from the captain's perspective simply because, you know, he doesn't have, like, it's not like the Federation was playing three steps ahead of time and they sent a diplomat out?
Right. I think that's a good point. They're out somewhere where no one else has been to this point, and Kirk needs to go in there, convince this group that the Klingon incursion is a bad idea for them.
Through punching.
Yes, through violence. Through some punching violence. And yelling. He needs to send our most violent guy to convince these nonviolent people. But I think that the reason he's out there, you could kind of say, is it's a mistake to send Kirk on this mission. Unfortunately, he's the closest person to them. You know what I mean? And the reason he's so bad at it is that it's one of the few times where one of the few episodes I feel where I disagree with Kirk almost the majority of the episode. Right? Like, I understand him going down at the first point and being like, you know, guys, like, the Klingons are bad news. They're going to be bad news for you guys. And the Organians saying, we don't really need you. And at that point, I feel like there's not much you can do. Kirk continues to push the point with them to a point where he's like, you're going to betray us and you're going to send us down. And it's like, they really haven't done anything to you, James T. Kirk. They've just kind of rebuffed your offer about what you're trying to say. Do you think Kirk was too aggressive with them?
Oh, he was way too aggressive.
Okay.
But Picard would have... But the problem is, there wouldn't have been an episode if he just packed up and left.
Right. That's the problem.
It would have been like, oh, the Klingons would have come down, subjugated the planet. Those beings would not have cared, and then they would have had a better strategic position in the war, and there would have been no episode.
Well, I guess we can get personal. When did you lose your vision? No, we can do it personal. About, like, what...
Last Tuesday.
What's the point of which philosophy is better to you? The TOS philosophy of I'm going to go in, and if your society sucks, I'm going to blow it up, or the TNG ethos of your society is terrible, I'm going to let you continue to be terrible?
I don't know. That question doesn't really have a good answer now, does it? Because, I mean, to a certain extent, you need to... I see where they're coming from with the Prime Directive of letting people, letting a society develop on its own and sort of letting people, you know, make mistakes. But at the same time, even TNG violated the Prime Directive multiple times. And there are simply points where people are too stupid to know that they're doing the wrong thing.
Right. TNG, like, I don't think they ever actually did this in TNG, but it would have been the way to go, right? If the Enterprise interfered in a society that was clearly morally wrong with what they were doing, right? Like, we never really encounter that. It's always some sort of bullshit about, like, they believe in gods that we don't believe in. It's like, oh, we can't interfere. But there was never a society that they interfered with that was clearly doing harm to people and stuff like that. TOS also hasn't done that to this point, although... I appreciate Kirk's sort of candor. I think he's wrong in this episode because he's kind of talking out his ass about what he thinks. But I appreciate their candor of going in and saying, this is what we're about. We think this is best. How about you explain what you think? The Organians don't really explain, and that's kind of the drive of what's going on. But I think the episode does a good job of explaining sort of why Kirk would do that, and also how the Klingons are very similar to us in this situation. And the Klingon commander has a couple lines about, we're not so different, you and I, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I think Kirk does a good job at, you know, trying to explain the situation. But at the same time, I don't feel that he was impartial. He wasn't simply, and I think I showed my hand on this before, he wasn't simply offering aid. He understood that if the Klingons took that planet, that would give them a strategic, like, base to strike at the Federation. So it's not like they didn't have a horse in the race.
Right, yes.
So that's almost why it's just like, well, you guys, you know, we don't want to, you know, hurt you. We're going to allow you to maintain your life, but we cannot have the Klingons overtake this planet and use it as a base against us. So we have no choice but to occupy this planet short term.
So,
and I'm not, the ethics of that are definitely questionable, but that was sort of what he wanted to do. He just wouldn't take no for an answer and wanted to convince them that he was right.
So I answered the question. I thought, do you think that Kirk, do you think that the Federation was more interested in sort of the strategic aspect? It sounds like that's what you're saying. You think the Federation is more interested in the strategic aspect than it is the sort of like ethics of keeping a society alive?
I think it would be better writing if they were, but I don't know. I don't know what was in the scriptwriters' heads at that given time. But if this were written in a modern time, that would be the conflict.
Yeah.
It would be like, oh, we're trying to act on your behalf. We're trying to protect you. But we have these, really have these secret motives and really have a horse in the race. And then they would deal with the ethical question of whether that was right or not.
Right.
If that group refused their help.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And I think that's hinted at in this episode. And I think that Kirk's motives are his like ulterior motives are sort of compromised here. And he's fortunate that he ran into a race that didn't need his protection from this kind of thing. Like, I can't see the Federation interfering in a sort of non-trivial planet about this situation. Like, the whole episode is predicated on Organia as a very important planet to the Federation and the Klingons.
So there are two ways to think about this, and I'll let you comment on whichever one you want to do. So one is what you were saying, which is, so what if, like, it was just a planet that was just off in the middle of nowhere, and the Klingons for some reason wanted it? Would the Federation have cared? And I think the other, and I think Trek about talked about this. I know I'm blanking on what it is. So let's just go with the first one.
So I mean, the first, I don't think the Federation would have interfered with that planet, with the planet that is not interesting to the Federation, which is antithetical to what the show would eventually become. But I think it's also a more realistic take on, like, the current world, how I would choose to view some sort of action like that. I can't see the Federation interfering. I think it makes more of a narrative sense. I think it makes more of a dramatic sense and all that stuff. Would you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Federation probably would have tried to help. But then if it was beyond their ability, they would have sort
just
of stepped back. they would have been like, oh, yeah, you know, we can see what we can do. But then once they started to exhaust a ton of resources, or if the battle seemed like it was too far gone, they would have cut their losses. Because they have, in some instances in Star Trek lore, kind of cut their losses where it wasn't worth the effort.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a tough space to leave them in. So are you?
Oh, and I remembered. So one, and this is kind of a different aspect on it. But what Trekabout was talking about was saying, what if these were not godlike beings and it was just a regular society? You know, would that have affected the story? You know, and it was literally just a poor group of people who were refusing help. Like, how would that have potentially changed the story?
It would have
not poor, but, you know, less civilized society.
Right. It would have drastically changed it. Right?
I think it would have. I think their argument was like, what if you just took the godlike beings out of the story and just focused on the conflict of a planet in like a demilitarized zone in between two war factions?
I think that's far less interesting than what they do. Like, if this was just a normal planet that I had to see Kirk and them fighting about it. It wouldn't have raised the point to me that Kirk's response to aggression from the Klingons, right, is almost equally aggressive, which I think makes sense, and that's the only way that you can live. Like, I don't... The pacifism of the Organians doesn't make sense unless they're godlike beings. You know what I mean? Like, there's the... Gandhi had the quote about, like, during World War II, the Jews should have just walked into the gas chambers of, you know, Auschwitz or whatever, because it would have brought the world down upon them. And it's why Gandhi's pacifist ideology doesn't make any sense to me. Because you, in order for pacifism to exist, you need someone who's not willing. You need to have people who are willing to defend you who don't subscribe to your beliefs, right? That doesn't make any sense. The minute pacifism falls apart, when the minute you run into someone who is antagonistic towards you, you can't be pacifist anymore because you'll get rough, you'll be railroaded, basically. So I think that if the Organians had just been pacifists, this would have been a very unsatisfying exploration into what the two sides going against to try to save, quote-unquote, the Organians would be. Because the Klingons are purely militaristic, and the Federation would have had to take the, we're doing this just to defend these people. And that doesn't really expose what I think the central conflict of the thing is, that as long as you have that kind of antagonism, you're going to have these situations, which is what the Organians are saying at the end of it.
I do think it's just such a crucial difference between TOS and what TNG would become, which is Kirk is just always so quick to violence.
Yes.
In so many situations. Like, that's his go-to approach.
But do you think Picard would have succeeded in this situation? I feel like this is a Kirk
situation. He would have probably have found some sort of backdoor solution that didn't involve violence in some sort of weird way. And that's not to say that Picard, you know, never got all fisticuffs on people, but... You know, just the way that Kirk handled it just seemed like, you know, violence and aggression were his first choice in pretty much any time he came to a crossroads of making a choice.
Do you think this episode would have been better as Picard as a captain? I think it would have been worse. I think the Picard story...
I think it would have
been
more boring.
Yes, it would have been more...
Because I already said it was boring to begin with.
It would have been more boring. I think this would have been a worse story with a Picard captaincy. I think this story needs Kirk, and it's setting off well against the TOS's earlier than TNG, obviously. It's the Next Generation. And I think that they do a good job of setting up the Kirk kind of cowboy diplomacy, or whatever they want to call it, is the weaknesses of it are shown here through this episode. And I think that it's interesting that they do that. It's interesting in kind of a Q-Who way from TNG. This is the first time I feel it's really flipping around on the main characters and showing us what they think is actually a weakness.
Yeah, no, I mean, overall, I think the execution of the episode overall, I think, works out really, really well in terms of kind of the characters' motives and how they react kind of confronted with these situations. You know, Kirk kind of and the Klingons going to violence, and the Organians kind of just preaching pacifism. It strikes a good contrast. And now is probably a good time to talk about the allegory of kind of the Vietnam War, and are the Organians South Vietnam? And
I think so.
You know, we're protecting them from North Vietnam and in the spread of communism. Is that what it's supposed to be?
South Vietnam couldn't actually defend itself. You know, so it's kind
they
of...
They were not godlike beings,
no,
is what you're saying.
If they were... If Arvin was some kind of, like... U.S. intervention would not have been necessary and would have been foolish in Vietnam if South Vietnam could defend itself. You know what I mean? That's the lesson. I think if you try to draw this as a Vietnam allegory, it doesn't work because it's changing what the history of that war was. Like, for the intentions of going in and stopping the spread of communism would have been good. It's just the outcome was not what we had expected to be. Where this episode is saying intervention itself is inherently flawed because it's violence against violence, and that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you, although I do think that probably the writers were looking around for source material, and that may have been their starting point.
I think in 1991, TNG was still using Vietnam as its story point. But
so, like, every Star Trek episode has something to do with the spread of communism.
Everything's about Vietnam, Rambo, and various other things that are going on in that.
They drew first blood, Wes. You just got to keep that in mind.
Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap this one up?
Just kind of a couple odds and ends that just kind of jumped out in this episode that I wrote down. The weird mind sifter or, mind breakdown eraser, tool, yeah. Mind eraser that they used on
Never
on
mentioned
Spock.
Again, I don't think.
I don't know if, I don't know if it comes up again in the Star Trek lore, but... do you think it would have been better if they'd like showed that or showed it just all of a sudden they're like, well, we hit him with a mind sifter and
level four
mind sifter. And he is really a merchant from Vulcan.
It makes sense, right? Like Spock has been portrayed to this point of being super mind powerful and super like in control of his own psyche and everything like that. So I think it works that they can't do anything to him. It's an empty threat because the thing never actually happens in the episode. It's just kind of a bullshit.
One of the reviews that I'd read would said the logical conclusion and how this kind of would have played out, and I think I agree with this, is that at some point Kirk would have found himself challenged by the mind sifter.
They
kind of built up what it was. Yeah. They hinted at it. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we're gonna sift his mind.
I'm glad they didn't bring it up, and I almost wish they hadn't brought it up at all. I almost wish that this machine was not mentioned in the episode because it doesn't add anything to it.
And you're right. I think it's almost like an all or nothing thing. Either it needed to be a bigger plot point, or they probably just shouldn't have included it. It was like a clever writing way for them to sort of like clear Spock to be an okay type
yes,
of guy.
Yes, that's the only reason that exists, is that Spock needs a reason to continue to be allowed to live on the planet.
But it's like they didn't even need to do that. They could have just said, like, oh, yeah, there are Vulcan merchants around. That's
right.
Fine.
Yeah. they're very logical in their pricing, and everything gets worked out for the best. Yeah.
Yeah, and there were one of the other things, and maybe, you know, you having watched more original episodes, understand better the chain of command. But one of my critiques of TOS is, so is Spock the second in command all the time?
Yes.
Science officer is such a confusing title to me.
He's a lieutenant commander. There is no commander rank, so he is second in command on this ship.
Okay.
Everyone else is lieutenants.
So they, and I know this is probably a common critique of TOS, but you always send your two highest ranking officers on an away team together.
It seems a bad idea.
Yeah. And I mean, I know this, they probably did it for narrative purposes, but Sulu, the helmsman, was left in charge at that point.
Yep.
So is he number three? Is that their management structure?
I think so. They usually fall to either Sulu or Scotty. They will never go to Uhura because they can't have a black woman in charge in a 67
because
in TV 90, show.
It's 1966.
Yeah, so
it's the 60s scene.
I don't think there was a, it was the 60s scene in this episode, was there?
I don't know. I'm sure there probably was.
I mean, outside of this sort of Uhura not taking command, but Sulu is there, so I'll assume that he's higher rank. But yeah. I don't think there was a... Nothing really stuck out to me as a "Hey, it was the '60s" kind of thing from this episode.
Yeah, I mean, not overtly, other than just
the
narrative,
the communism
problems and communism.
All right.
Yeah. So, two other quick things before we go over. So, why did they? So, I think at one point they gave the phasers back to Kirk and Spock.
They were in the cabinet.
They were just in a cabinet. I thought that was funny. So, I'm like, okay, just so you never looked in that cabinet over there.
And they shot a close-up of Spock opening the cabinet door to get the phasers out. It just felt so unnecessary.
Okay, so one, it was hilarious that they were just literally, they put them in a cabinet over on the side of the room. Like, they didn't hide them in any
They didn't destroy
place.
Them. They're godlike beings. They're going to just be like, we don't allow...
Also,
weapons of destruction.
Why the hell do you give them the phasers back if they're not going to even work?
I thought the only thing I think was a little bit worse was that they gave a specific degree Fahrenheit that the weapons were at. They're like, they are 350 degrees. It's like, A, the 350 degrees didn't feel hot enough to me.
Well, wouldn't that just like burn someone's hand right off?
Well, I feel like I could pick up a 350-degree thing and be like, oh, it's uncomfortable, but I'll manage to use it. You know what I mean? Like they should have just said it's at a temperature that is so hot, we can't measure it. Like that causes you to instantly just go, oh, fuck. Can't handle this.
I'm pretty sure if you grab something that was 350 degrees, you'd immediately have burns right on your hand.
You would, but I'd be willing to shoot an enemy of mine with the weapon. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I could hit someone with a pan that's hot if I'm being attacked. I would suffer a burn, but I'd be willing to do it. That's my problem with 350 degrees.
So, yeah, maybe it was just how hot convection ovens could go, like the 1960s.
How hot is too hot?
Yeah, and this isn't really a discussion point. It was more just kind of, I just enjoyed it. There was a scene where he was talking to the council, and literally the head of the council is in the middle of... like a line, and Kirk just whips out his communicator and ignores him.
Yes, and ignores him. He does that all the time.
So is that a recurring thing where it's just like people are like talking to him and he doesn't have cell phone etiquette to properly...
Kirk puts priority on the... It probably is pre-cell phone etiquette. Kirk puts priority on the communicator. If someone calls him on the communicator, he immediately answers it no matter what the situation
it's
is.
It's just like, like literally someone's dying over there. It's like, oh, my phone's ringing. I gotta check this.
That is a pre-cell phone world, right?
He's like, you know, Spock, you up, you out. Like, what's he doing over there?
Are you in or are you out?
Yes, yes. So, yeah, those are all my random one-off points that jumped out in this episode to me.
Guys, we're going to be back. Me and Mark are going to be back. We're going to play an audio clip from the episode Aaron to Mercy. Me and Mark are going to come back and we're going to give our final thoughts and ratings for this episode, the introduction of the Klingons. So, see you soon.
Fascinating. Pure energy. Pure thought. Totally incorporeal. Not life as we know it at all.
But what about this planet? The fields, the buildings, this citadel?
Conventionalizations, I should say. Useless to the Organians. Created so that visitors such as ourselves could have conventional points of reference.
But is all this possible?
We have seen it with our own eyes. I should say the Organians are as far above us on the evolutionary scale as we are above the amoeba.
Well, Commander, I guess that takes care of the war. Obviously, the Organians aren't going to let us fight.
A shame, Captain. It would have been glorious.
Sorry, Mark. Final thoughts and ratings about Aaron to Mercy, which is another good title. But the introduction of the Klingons, all that goes swimmingly, I think, in my opinion. I'm not blown away by this episode. I think it's more important as sort of like a fan of the series and what it all means and the sort of philosophy of what the TOS idea about what they're trying to do out in space is more interesting than anything. I'm going to give this one, and you guys, if you're on YouTube, you can vote in the upper right-hand corner. Click the little button, and the little drop-down will come out, and you can vote on our 1 to 5 scale what you thought this one was. I'm going to give this one a 3 out of 5. Would you go lower than that? What do you think?
I think I would give it a 3 as well. Okay. It was a perfectly watchable episode. What it means to the series introducing the Klingons is probably important. That being said, I think we hinted before that it could have probably been any warlike race and it would not have necessarily had a great long-term impact. I'm not really sure necessarily why it's called an Errand of Mercy. No. I know you've talked about the titles before and how they may be hit or miss. I don't know why this is...
It doesn't make any sense. Who's Mercy?
I don't know.
And what Errand?
The Organians are showing mercy. I don't know. Mercy upon the two lesser beings.
No, it's
and since when is mercy an errand?
It's a badass title.
Like laundry
title.
And mercy. You it's do your errands. I don't know. Like
it's a badass title. It just doesn't. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
So are they just like picking phrases that sound badass and cool and just calling episodes that?
Yeah, I think that's the case. Yeah. So yeah, I think we'd agree on a 3 out of 5. I think it's a pretty good. I mean, it's a. I wouldn't recommend saying if you've never seen Star Trek, you should watch this episode. So it's not a 4 for me, but I think it's fine. I didn't have a big problem with it. I think we came to a good conclusion. I think it's the philosophy is interesting, right? Like that's what this one's about.
Yeah, I think the philosophy is interesting. And I think, you know, it might have a greater impact on me if, You know, it just wasn't like the godlike beings were such a deus ex machina.
Yeah.
In pretty much every Star Trek episode, it's just like, oh, there's some explanation. It's a godlike alien race that just is acting strangely just because.
Just because. Well, guys, I hope you appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the content today. If you do, I'd appreciate hitting a like on YouTube or rating us on iTunes, rating us on any of your podcatchers. Leave a comment on any of those things. You can comment on YouTube. You can comment to me at Twitter at ThatPenskyFile on Twitter. Go to Facebook.com/ThePenskyPodcast. You can leave a like and a comment there. All that stuff. And lastly, go to Patreon.com/ThePenskyPodcast. You get extra content if you give us a couple dollars a month. You get extra content. We're talking about Ex Machina, and we are talking about Suicide Squad. We just finished up our RoboCop stuff. So things like that interest you, stuff that's off the beaten path, and you want to support the show, which is greatly appreciated. Go to Patreon.com/ThePenskyPodcast. Mark, thank you very much for coming on.
All right, thanks again for having me, Wes.
Absolutely. And you might be back for a last TOS go-around. We'll see how many episodes we have. But I think these have been good conversations. Guys, hopefully you're enjoying it as well. Let us know what you think. Let us know where we went wrong, all that stuff. Until then, see you later.